Right, good morning, everyone. I'm quite surprised that there's actually anyone here, given it's 10 a.m. in the morning. My name's Gunter Ullman. With me is Stefan Fry. There's a couple of other people that couldn't make it here today, Thomas Dubenorfer and Martin May. So we're talking about some research that we did recently, a paper last month on this. Talking about how do we, you know, what happens to the internet if you manage to exploit 100 million plus hosts, hopefully before brunch. So we weren't quite sure about what sort of state would be in. So if you're wondering about the little G in the top right hand corner, that's a reminder to us who's actually meant to be speaking. So. And as you can probably tell, that from the accents, we're not precisely locals. So here we go. So the situation, the internet's getting more and more hostile. There's a lot more profit-motivated attacks. There's a new sort of a hackonomy about who's going to be doing this attack, how much money you're going to make. There's been a lot of press about the mass defacements. You know, all these iframe injection using cross-site scripting or search engine optimization. Already driving the drive-by downloads type of things. And you know, if you look at the press, you've probably seen all these things about, there's a big SEO attack in March where just one of the URLs in the injection was about 1.2 million defacements, or page defacements. From where I work and all that, we're currently monitoring about 100,000 new defacements or repeat defacements every week. And so these are all typical iframe injections, all driving to a particular website or websites in Hong Kong, China, these sorts of things. And given all this information about all the websites being hacked and all these mass defacements and all that, we sort of thought, there's an awful lot of data about the servers and about what's happening there. But if you actually manage to do a really good iframe injection and manage to install it onto a fairly very popular site, what would be the real damage? How many hosts out there? So how many web users are actually out there today that would be infected through these fairly common attack vectors? And so to have a look at that side and try to get a ground truth of if you've got everything just running just right, how big a damage could you actually do? So that's what we're interested in finding out. So what we've sort of looked at this, so how do we measure this? How do we understand how many vulnerable web users and vulnerable web browsers there are out there? Nice easy one, the user agent fields. In every single HTTP packet, the nice user agent in there. If you're using anything except for Internet Explorer, minor version information about that particular web browser. And in fact, most of the web browsers now, with all the additional plugins, you also get a lot of details about the actual plugins that have been installed on top of those web browsers. Okay, and of course, just about every single web server will record that information, and it's more of a case of just sifting out the user agent information. And the browser version, particularly the minor version, can be easily associated to a particular. So, how do we get that information? One of us had a good idea of saying, well, Google has lots of web servers, they get lots of traffic. How can we sort of get our hands on some information? So we managed to get hold of our work with Google on the analysis of their web logs. So we had access to all of their user agent data by day from between January 2007 through to January 2nd. So great thanks to Google for giving us that. And it's, everyone understands just how big Google is, and this is the first study to actually have access to that truly global data set and that massive, massive volume of data. But a key thing is, we didn't hack Google, we actually just asked them very politely for access to the information. So.
Okay, and this is what we found out based on our measurements. More than 37 million users do not always use the latest, most secure version of their browsers. We came up by measuring directly using this methodology Opera, Safari, and Firefox. You see the respective numbers, and we estimated Internet Explorer. I'll show you later how we came up with this estimate. As with an iceberg, the tip above the water is just the smaller part. The bigger part below the water is what we couldn't measure, and this is vulnerable in plugins that even the most secure browser can be owned by that. So, more interesting, the numbers I showed you for, before is just at the end of our observation period. Now we looked at what is the evolution of the share of the latest major version of those four browsers. What we see here is, for example, Firefox and Internet Explorer 7, they have different dynamics. They were released in about the same month. Firefox acquired about more than 90% of the share within Firefox browser versions. Internet Explorer 7 is still only about half of the percentage or half of the people that use that browser. Very interesting also, if you look at the Safari 3, around July 2007, this was the beta version that was released, and we observed a jump from around 0 to about 10%. Looks like they have beta user community. Then we have the next two jumps is the official release of Safari 3 and then the massive rollout together with the new version of the operating system. When you look at Internet Explorer 7, around Christmas 2007, January 2008, looks like lots of people got new boxes with Windows installed. Another observation is the end of support of Firefox 1.5. If again, if you look at May 2007, there's a big jump in Firefox. So Firefox end of May was the latest version of 1.5 released, and the big jump happened then when the first patch that was only available for Firefox 2 was released. So this was obviously a huge incentive for people to upgrade their browsers. So this was the major version of the browsers. Now we look at within the major, latest major version, what is the build that we found that applied all the patches available at a certain date. So the maximum share of most secure browser versions we found was in Firefox within those 1.5 years when we measured, and they had 83.3% at max. So at the other end, we found Internet Explorer at maximum 47.6%. Part of this situation is because Internet Explorer still has a huge share of older versions that you like, Internet Explorer 6 and below, as they don't have technologies like anti-phishing and so on that we need in today's hostile environment. Okay, as said before, Internet Explorer 7 doesn't reveal the minor version, so we had a look at Secunia's Personal Software Inspector, very nice tool that every one of you can install, and it passes the registry and reports the versions it finds back home. Obviously, using the user agent string is unbiased because you all contributed to our measurement without knowing it. But if you use PSI, you have to install a tool first, so the results from PSI are biased. If we take directly the results from PSI, we see 4.4% of Internet Explorer 7 is not patched. If we compare results from Secunia with our measurement results, we find a correction factor of around 2.1 in their data, and we use this correction factor of 2.1 to come up with our number of 637 million hosts at risk. Okay, what's the dynamics? If we zoom in about a 2 or 3 months window, we see here the update dynamics for two updates of Firefox 2007-2008. We have very, very high dynamics within the say first 3 days after the release of a new version. So the latest version, and then it gets up with the most recent version. Within about 3 days, Firefox population installs about, or 80% of the Firefox population installs the most recent version. We also see a very sharp decline of the second latest version. So say a couple of days, 10 or 20 days after the release of a new patch, the second latest version drops easily below 5%. Compare Firefox and Opera on the whole year 2007. This is the dynamics we found. So we used Firefox and Opera. Those, they are very similar. Those are free browsers. They run on a big selection of operating systems. We again see the same dynamics I showed before repeated for Firefox. On the other hand, on Opera, technically it's the same dynamics, but it's much, much slower. So it, for Opera, it takes more than 11 days percent of what they had before a new patch was released, and the share of obsolete or very old versions still is very, very high for Opera, just because they expand the time so much. Another observation is this sawtooth on top of Firefox. We call this the weekend effect. It turns out that the most recent version of Firefox is more popular during the weekend at the weekend than during the week. Probably the option is that the private users adopt new versions faster than corporate users in their environment.
Cool. So, obviously, you know, when you're looking at all these different browsers, major and minor versions, the question really becomes, you know, why aren't people upgrading? Why aren't they patching and, you know, applying these latest security fixes, the latest major advances to their software? And frankly, you know, users themselves, the general population, probably, you know, excluding anyone here, when, why, and how to patch their systems. Okay, and they don't understand really why they need to upgrade to these newer features. And you know, when we look at even some of the better updating systems for the browsers, the messages that are popping up and the advice and the advice provided to the users is generally seen as botherware. Okay, and so if they can click through by cancel or whatever, then that's what they tend to do. So, you know, how can things sort of be helped? You know, can we nudge them and all that? You know, the normal sort of way is, you know, try to scare the shit out of them, really. And generally, that sort of works in the, you know, for techies. But you know, the vast majority of people out there running web browsers, surfing the internet, have no idea. And you know, exploits, vulnerabilities mean nothing to them. Malware means nothing to them. You know, when they brought their Dell computer in 2000, it came with a 3-month license of McAfee. And you know, aren't they still safe from that? So one of the things that we're sort of thinking about, were, you know, we put in the paper for a bit of discussion, was what happens if you take something that, you know, is well known to consumers, you know, consumers of software and consumers of anything. We thought, well, what about if you try to apply a best before date or best before philosophy to software? You know, so it works really well in food, you know, and when you're going down to the grocery store and you see a bottle of milk there, you check out the best before date or, you know, expires by date, you know what that means to you. You know, as you get closer to that expiry date, you know, you might sniff the milk a little bit. If it's a week after the milk expiry date, you're going to be very wary of it. You know, it's not saying that you don't use it. It just makes you more aware of what you should be doing about that particular consumer item. And so we're sort of thinking about, you know, can you apply that to software and to particular web browsers? And you know, as one example, we're sort of looking at, you know, how could you get this idea across. And so here's you know, if you imagine that the browser itself is now telling you that you know, it's been expired for a certain number of days and there's a certain number of patches that are missing. Yeah, this is by far not a solution. You know, ideally, the ideal solution is that auto updates work silently, work 100% of the time, and do it instantaneously. But you know, just making users aware of what these problems are may be the first sort of step. We've had a lot of feedback from organizations, particularly financial organizations, that like the expiry dates and best before dates associated with browsers in particular, so they can sort of work out in advance whether you know, their customers, as they connect to their websites and start using them, if they're using a very old browser, you know, the probability that they've already been compromised in some way gets incrementally higher, so they can do extra back-end checking about, you know, fraudulent transfers and other transactions. So what can we sort of say in conclusion? Well, you know, first of all, you know, if you want to hack a planet, you don't need a zero day. Okay, a well-placed iframe on a popular search engine would be more than enough to generate, you know, gather, you know, 100 million odds infected web browsers, you know, on a daily or weekly basis. You know, this isn't big stuff. This is very, very easy stuff. you know, actually browser patching itself is a very complex problem. You know, there has been a great improvement in those auto patching technologies, but they're still, you know, a long way from actually working the way. You know, and from our analysis, you know, we're quite happy to say that, you know, Firefox is leading the pack on actually getting the auto updating and the actual patching process working for web browsers the best. But, you know, patching itself is only really part of the solution. This whole thing is really about this ergonomics of how easy it is to actually use these the patching processes. You know, so when we looked at comparing, you know, Firefox with Opera, you know, Firefox requires one click to apply the latest update, on average about 11 clicks to install the latest version. Now, I guess, you know, from what we're sort of seeing, and you know, a lot of the psychologic analysis of these processes are really basically seeing that, you know, if you have to require, you know, if you have to prompt the user, you're going to fail. And normally what you see on any of these browser technologies is any time that there is a pop-up message saying, you know, you need to do this, or there's an option, it actually means that the expert who wrote the web browser or the expert who developed the application didn't know what to do themselves. So, given we're all sort of experts in some sense or not, you know, here I've got a couple of screenshots. So, can you tell from these two screenshots which browser is missing the last 8 patches and is still running, you know, Flash version 6, A or B? It's a sort of trick question because it's IE6, so we didn't class it as the most. Because, frankly, for any user, there is no visual way of being able to tell whether you're using a secure browser or an insecure browser and how many patches you're missing. So if we don't know as the experts, then how are, you know, 1.4 billion users supposed to know that they're still using the right sort of technologies? So with that, I think our time is sort of up, so I'd like to say thanks, and of course, you know, you all contributed to our results if you've ever used any Google services. And I guess we've got a few questions, if there are any.